Hey everybody, and welcome to an utter episode of Indie Film Cafe. I'm your host, the Moo Cow, otherwise known as Paul A. Presenza, and today I am joined by...
your co-host, Jonathan Moody.
Outstanding. Welcome, sir. And we are joined by...
Angel Bradford.
Yay! Welcome back, Angel.
Yes, thanks
we
for
say
having
welcome
me.
Back, but she hasn't actually been on this particular show before. Mm-hmm. She's been on the Patreon only.
Right.
So if you want to be a Patreon, you can listen to Angel get tortured by the poor movie Creeping Terror.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That was a fun movie, didn't
you
think?
It was fun, yeah.
There you go.
It was fun.
Well, we dug up yet another moldy oldie for you to enjoy. We are going to be watching the weird 1957 movie called From Hell It Came.
The monster on that cover looks pretty creepy.
Yeah, well, it doesn't look anything like this.
Oh. Wow, once again, being fooled by the cover.
Yes, not to stump you, but this killer tree movie is the root of all evil. I don't want to plant any false notions in your head. It's kind of seedy. I'll just leave it at that.
I am dead right
did
now.
Did you plan all?
This is the stuff that goes through my head on a daily basis.
Oh God,
that's phenomenal. Now you I really can't wait to watch it.
You and James Balsamo would get along very well.
Yeah. Yes, we're peas in a pod.
Yes, you are. God damn it.
All right, guys. Well, welcome. We will get back to this weird movie after we hear some mood music. And we're back, and wow, that was really something.
Really something.
Something is all you can say it was.
First impressions, what did you guys think of the Tabanga?
It was hilarious.
Really? Why? Weren't you scared? This is a horror movie.
Oh, yeah, I was so scared of the... you know, the wooden stump coming out of the ground and, you know, the fake natives and... I think the thing that scared me the most was the one lady's scream near the end. That was pretty terrifying. She sounded like a crow or something.
Or a wounded duck or something.
Right.
You kept saying, is that a duck?
Right. This is funny.
Oh,
oh
Lord.
My goodness. Yeah, so from hell it came.
From hell it came.
So this was, what, Allied...
United
Allied production. So that's kind of a low-key indie
group. So is
group.
That like, yeah. Okay, yeah. So have they done any other movies, do you know? Like,
I don't remember. I know it was directed by Dan Milner, who together with his brother John Milner helped create this Jack Milner helped create this particular film, and Dan Milner has also done Phantom from 10,000 Leagues,
which I had heard of, but I don't think I've seen that one. Yeah. Is that's got to be a Misty type movie?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same kind of a stinker. And he did another movie too, much earlier than that. He was actually born in 1901, so he was kind of an older person.
Ah.
And he was an editor. He was an editor who edited a bunch of other films, too. But these are the only real movies that he directed. And, you know, this one pretty much, I remember reading about previously, it got pilloried in the press. I mean, you know, when this came out, even back in 1957, people were like, yeah, this is terrible.
Well, this wasn't the drive-in days or anything yet.
It was
so.
Just prior, really.
So it was right before then, so people were probably just like not ready for this.
Yeah. Kind of nobody was quite ready for this.
I know I wasn't ready for it.
I wasn't ready either. And I've been you know, watching these movies for a while now, and... as I said before, it reminded me a lot of The Giant Claw, which we've reviewed. And if you've seen The Giant Claw, it, like, you thought that the woman and like yelling was annoying. I mean, just the giant claw itself screeching. It was like, rah, rah, rah.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
Terrible.
Right.
Terrible.
So
We did have a ScarJo lookalike in,
we
in
did,
here.
We did. So usually we kind of like to have our guest or somebody sort of encapsulate what happens in the film. Oh, so Angel, can you kind of tell the good folks at home what happens in this movie from Hella Came?
Okay, so basically you have these natives, sacrificing somebody who, you know, he did something wrong.
He was an island prince.
Yeah, and I didn't actually see that in the
movie. That's what it says in the back.
Yeah, he looked like a surfer.
With all the exposition, I'm surprised we lost that part.
I know. I'm going to let you talk about the writing and the exposition part.
So they kill this surfer-looking island prince native on the island, and his spirit apparently comes back as a tree monster. And
as you do.
And I honestly, I don't know if the monster is called a Baranga or a Tabanga.
That's what they called it in the trailer.
In the trailer, they called it something else.
It may have a number of different names. It was probably re-released a number of times with different titles, because that's what you did back then to try and recoup your losses.
But
I want to know what the original title was.
Basically, it's just a movie, a revenge movie, with a tree taking revenge on those that messed with it in its prior life.
Because it does more than that. I mean, it actually kills the people who done him wrong. And
then it starts to go after other people.
There's still runtime to film. Like, well, we got to do something with it.
Yeah. It's not like he kills all those people, then he goes, okay, my work is done.
Right. I'm going to go plant myself somewhere.
God, you're going back to the plants
so
now.
So he decided, you know, to start going after the other people that he wasn't meant to.
And like a good wandering monster movie always does, he wanders over and picks up the lead female, the girl, and carries her off. And I guess he's going to toss her into the quicksand too, because this is what a wild Tabanga does.
Right, yes.
And they stop him. And how do they stop him?
They shoot him.
A whole bunch of times, but he had to be shot in a certain area.
Right.
Had to be shot where he got killed originally with the knife.
It was still in there.
It was still in there, and he needed to be shoved back in. Which, okay, first of all, how do they know that? Like, how did they know that that was the thing that was going to kill him? They didn't. You know, they were just guessing, and oh my god, it worked, you know? Like, I hate these kind of movies where the people don't really know, and they're like, let's just figure this out. Okay, you know, because,
The whole reason why they started, you know, like, poking and prodding at the tree anyway was kind of ridiculous. Like, why would you, oh, this tree is just here, like,
well, it starts off as like a little stump, and then like a couple hours they look and it's halfway out of the ground, and then a couple hours there's the entire thing's out of the ground.
Yep,
into a tree. But like, the funniest thing is at the beginning, when it was just a stump or whatever, it wasn't even a big thing, they kept calling it a monster already.
Right.
And that pissed you off.
It did.
Like, you know, you were just like...
Oh. And not only that, but they kept treating it like it was human. They just assumed that...
They held the stethoscope.
Yes, the doctor's looking at the stump
IV'd,
with
its stethoscope.
They IV'd it? Oh my god, it's so ridiculous.
And then it ends up developing this goofy-looking face and, you know, it looks
like
a snarl.
It has eyes.
Yeah, it has eyes and teeth and...
And it's got like a little flappy jaw that kind of goes up and down, but it doesn't actually say anything.
Little flappy hands that really don't do anything. They don't move. And I'm wondering why, because it looked obviously like it was a suit that they were having. Like, why didn't the arms just move? Why didn't he move his arms?
I think you noticed the feet were like slippers.
Yeah, yep, the feet were slippers. And I didn't know trees wore pants.
There you go.
The tree, that's what it should have been called, the tree that wore pants. I would have watched that movie.
I watched that movie. My goodness. So, and of course the good white scientists are there to help these poor downtrodden natives and bring them into the modern world already. And at the same time, there's also this really super annoying British lady.
Australian, I think she was. Because she said something about going back to Australia.
Well, going to Australia, but I think she's British.
Who even was this lady? Why was she even there?
I guess she's supposed to be the comic foil or something. But she's just super annoying.
Very annoying.
With this really bad fake accent and, you know, blimey this and, you know, crikey that. All just ridiculous.
And she wanted to hit on everybody.
Everybody. Oh, Lord. She's like, you know, 60 years old, I'd say. And just, yeah, we called her drunk British Betty White.
Yeah.
And then we figured out she was Australian or maybe going to Australia.
Yeah,
maybe
we didn't know.
Drunk
something.
Australian British Betty White.
I don't know. Whatever. Wherever she's from. Who knows? We couldn't tell from the accent because I think it felt like a fake accent
a little bit.
Oh, God,
yeah. Yeah, it was terribly fake.
It was terrible.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, everything in the movie was fake. The natives were fake. The island was fake. The plants were fake. The monster was fake.
The helicopter was fake.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Well, it was somewhere else because you saw, you guys noticed that it had a, like it was covered, the sign was covered from whatever it actually was from.
So it was somebody's that they borrowed or rented and then they
or
they
stole.
They made up a little military insignia and they covered it up and yeah.
And most of the movie was just traveling, people driving, people walking, and running.
Yeah. Well, the humans ran, but the damn tree just sort of slowly shuffled.
God.
You know, it was shuffled. It's one of the slowest monsters you'll ever see.
The tree shuffled.
You know, between the rug monster and Creeping Terror and the mummy and the robot in Aztec Mummy versus the Robot. Several of the slowest monsters. This is right up there as far as being one of the slowest monsters in movie history.
Is there a thing with that? Like, is that a thing that they wanted to do back then? Because well, Night of the Living Dead had some slow zombies. You know what I mean? And that was like the start of
Maybe it's just like tension building. You know, the fact that
it's slow. The old tradition was the wandering monster. You know, it picked you up. Or usually females picked them up and wandered
creature
off
from
with
the
them.
Black Lagoon.
Right.
I mean, even King Kong, you know, King Kong picks up the
robot
lady
monster. That's a classic, you know.
King Kong wasn't slow, though. King Kong actually did walk.
But there was that trend of, you know, picking up women and, you know, just holding them.
Yeah, there was this great quote. I forget. I don't know if it was a mystery or not, but Mystery Science Theater, when they covered robot monster, because the guy keeps picking, you know, not only did the monster pick up the girl, but the hero picks up the girl because she guess he doesn't trust her enough to just run. Yeah. So he picks her up to run off with her. And I'm like, he was like, she's getting picked up so much, she might as well have handles grafted onto her hips.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
You know. Pretty much. And this movie had, like, there was even you even mentioned that you never see a guy get picked up, you know.
Usually,
and you did in this movie.
You did in this movie.
Because the monster just wanted to keep picking everybody up.
Yeah, he picked everybody up.
Well, it's funny. It had a very interesting mode of killing people. You'd think it would just, like, smash people or strangle them or something, but instead,
it would carry
them slowly and dump your ass in this quicksand.
Except for that one dude who just, you know, so happened to trip over a tree branch and hit his head on a rock.
And
you don't see his kill.
Right. Well, you do. Remember, he throws him down the hill.
Well, that was that same guy?
That was the same guy.
Yeah, okay.
That was the witch doctor, the phony witch doctor. The guy with the worst aim I've
ever
seen.
Yeah. Oh, right over.
He has a spear. And, of course, you know, ninja tree Tabanga like he is, nobody sees him until he's right there, even though he's incredibly slow and loud and stupid. But he turns around and, oh, my God, the Tabanga, I have a spear, because he just happens to have it. And he's like, and he throws it completely, like, not even close.
It's like he was trying to go for, like, Olympic records with the way he was, like, just threw
like,
it,
dude,
you know, way.
You couldn't hit a like, broadside of a barn with a howitzer. I mean, you just, it was bad.
So ridiculous. But, yeah,
the movie sort of relies on the characters being incredibly stupid, slow, and incompetent.
Well, they can't they accomplish that, yeah, for sure.
Most definitely.
So I was going to say, to go back to the picking up, you noticed that somebody picked Angel. You noticed that somebody picked up when they got picked up, she was actually holding on to the thing.
The
so, you know, right? Because she didn't get dropped by accident or whatever. But,
well, remember.
But she was supposed to be, like, fainted. Because, you know, and you said something, Paul, about the fainting. Like, everybody, you know, in those movies, you even asked Angel if she has ever fainted.
It was before, you know, I mean, it's sort of a gradual thing, you know. In the early days like this, women just fainted. And then later into like the 60s, 70s, and 80s, the women got to run, but then they would trip and fall.
Yeah.
Because they're women, you know, and the women don't actually get to fight until like the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, I guess.
I don't think I've ever laughed so hard at a movie that wasn't supposed to be laughed at. You know?
I almost, like, with all your puns, Paul, I was starting to, like, I was getting tears in my eyes laughing so hard.
Because it's just the root of all evil.
I mean, it was just so, and it was so terrible. Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, these kind of movies, they're so fun, though, you know?
Sure.
Like, you can't get mad at them. And at least with the it was faster than the rug monster.
Barely.
You know? Yeah, a little faster. It was the same thing, though. Like, I was expecting him to eat the people, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm guessing that the outfit wouldn't allow that or whatever.
Probably didn't allow the actor to breathe.
Yeah. So he
Maybe
was like...
he's walking so slow.
Right.
I'm wondering who did the outfit, because I know they had a special effects person, and they had a makeup person, and they had a costume
designer.
I want
to know who did the hair and costume, because everything was so similar. Like, yeah.
Remember,
exactly
what was the movie
like...
that we loved, the one with the Larry Blamire did, where he did the throwback movie?
Which one?
God, I can't...
It was the Lost Skeleton?
Yeah, Lost Skeleton, Cadavera. What happens there? You've got, it's an alien in this case, but it's the same thing, a guy in a crappy costume who picks up the girl and wanders off with them. And that is so typical of the quote-unquote monster movies of the period.
I bet that happens, because I haven't seen it in forever, but I bet that happens in Monster Phantom Lake.
Sure.
Which was Christopher R. Mim.
So here's the question that I've always had about that. What exactly are you going to do with these people now that you picked them up and wandered with them? What is the idea? I don't think it's to kill them, because if you're going to kill them, you just do it right then and
there.
No, they picked up the women. They're carrying them off to...
quicksand? Like what?
No, my feeling is it's a symbolic way of saying they're going to have sex with them.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's the only thing I can think of, because why else? Why would you carry them off?
The deed.
What are you going to do with them?
Well,
and
no, because, okay,
be women, yeah.
So you look at, like, Octoman, right, and everything. So we've done a movie called Octoman.
Same
and
thing.
Picks up the girl. But, like, I think that, and it brings them into the, like, water or whatever. And my thing is that they like the girls, because it's usually always girls.
Right, they usually fixate on a female.
You know, so they are in love with the girl. Like, they decide to make that them their bride or whatever.
The Tabanga and his little beating heart.
Right, yeah.
I know. Well, I mean,
he's got a Woody for the doctor.
But he was a male at one point before
That's
he
true.
Died. And
That's
so,
true.
Like, he was maybe... I would have loved to see more of that. Like, that would have been cool. Like, if Topanga was, like, falling in love with the doctor, and you could see the hearts in his eyes,
oh my
you know,
God.
Right?
That's how I would, if I were going to remake this movie, I would do it so that they picks up the doctor, carries her off, and then he keeps her, and then they try to have a relationship, and he's like, you know, try to make you fall in love. You know, the same thing that the creepy professor was doing to the doctor, I would have the Tabanga doing that to her. Because,
classic,
you know,
monster love story.
Yes, yeah. yes. That would be more fun, and the perils and problems that you have trying to make a nice, happy life and relationship with an evil tree monster that picks you up and wanders off with you. What about the children? You know, I mean, that kind of a thing. Because it's just so, like, remember in the turkey movie Monster, where she's like, what about the children? Same thing. The turkey picks some people up and wanders them around. It's ridiculous. But what else are they going to be doing with these women? I mean, it has to be that. I mean, if I were a wandering monster and I was picking up the lead chick in a film, of course my thought is I'm going to wander her off someplace quiet and make sweet, sweet love.
Even to drunk Betty White?
Yeah, well, no. Maybe not her. a hard pass on that one. She's not the lead, though, so...
Oh, okay. I mean, the lead was pretty cute, but she looked like the better version of the drunk Australian Betty White.
Well, and there were a couple of fake native girls that were actually pretty cute, which was kind of nice.
I mean, all the... I, Orchid. All the girls generally were kind of cute. Yeah. I mean, they didn't look bad.
But
yeah, Naomi, oh, she was rough.
You know, there was that Native woman who had the pin curls in her hair, and I'm like, okay, you're That's a Native Corey. Woman. Why would you have pin curls
See,
in
I don't
hair?
Even know what a pin curl is, yeah. but you're a makeup person, so you knew exactly.
Yes.
I know, which the makeup person should have known. Which, by the way, we forgot to mention, though, the makeup guy is Harry... I forgot his last name, but he was the makeup guy for Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Yay.
And a ton of other Ed Wood films and everything. And if you watch the Ed Wood movie, he's the guy that's putting the makeup on Bela Lugosi's track, track marks and stuff, you know, and everything. But it's, you know, it's sort of funny that, you know, that he directed, or not directed, but the makeup for this movie as well.
Independent film, and you know, there's certainly a touch of Ed Wood to this kind of movie, except it's probably a little bit more coherent than Ed.
I feel bad for that. I feel bad for like makeup people that have, I mean, and you see it today too. A lot of makeup people work for different people, and some people are not as great as other people. So, you know, you get kind of that kind of thing going. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
So what did you think about the makeup in general for the film?
Honestly, I think the best makeup was on that lady's face. The one who came into the doctor and was face.
Yeah.
I thought that makeup was really well done. I mean, the tree, the sculpting and all that stuff actually really wasn't that bad. But the cheesy eye paint and everything else that they added on top of it. And then, you know, the pant legs and the slippers on the feet. I mean, it...
Did the natives look like natives?
No, they did not. I'm talking, those are the most... Like, those are the palest natives I think I've ever seen.
Yeah. Remember when they were, like, dancing around? It's like the awkward white people dancing.
The dude on the drums.
You were saying stuff about the dancing earlier. Yeah. Like, you were laughing. They're like, oh, halfheartedancing.com. And all that stuff.
It looked
stuff.
Like they were doing, Funny. Like, some sort of weird, like sprinkler move
right,
or something.
Right. Because
like,
they have no idea. They're just making shit up as they go.
I know. I wonder if that was, like, who did the script for this? I wonder.
Oh, I think that was... Jack.
No, screenplay by Richard Bernstein.
Oh, that's right, Richard Bernstein. Yeah,
is he?
But he wrote. He like did some of the other Milner stuff.
Oh, okay. So he did the Phantom one.
Yeah,
and
he
stuff?
Wrote like five or six other movies.
Okay,
but they were all pretty much indie stinkers, you know. Mm-hmm. So he's not like a name. But since we are talking about names, I thought it might take this opportunity to talk a little bit about the cast. So. Probably the biggest name is Todd Andrews, and he's the guy who plays the lead, Dr. William Arnold.
Oh, the guy that doesn't let the girl kiss
right.
him. He
right.
just like goes right in for
right.
it.
He's the sort of typical male lead character of the 50s.
Oh, just like if you go back to Giant Claw, so you haven't seen Giant Claw, but there's a scene.
You have to.
But there's a scene
giant
in it where.
Bird puppet.
He, like, the lead guy starts trying to make out with the girl. On a in an airplane. Remember that scene?
Right.
And it was so awkward. It was like, what the hell is he trying to do? And that was the time period.
They had very different ideas about consent in the 50s. Like, you know, your eyes, your mouth says no, 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 but your eyes say yes,
right.
which is horseshit.
Yeah.
Can't be done today. But he's the probably the biggest name, so to speak, which is to say he isn't really a name. He was in a bunch of movies, especially a lot of westerns and things like that in the 40s. So he was in a few named movies, though. He was in the original Heaven Can Wait in 1943, and he was in stuff like Return of the Ape Man and Murder in the Big House, and he was in sort of a lot of lesser movies and B-movies in the 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Then he sort of transitioned into television, so he was in things like Gunsmoke and Rawhide and all that kind of thing. So I think people who know Todd Andrews sort of associate him with westerns of the period.
I was
going to
say
so.
Gunsmoke. I know, like I've actually heard of Gunsmoke.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever watched it.
If you remember, we were talking about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, like they were doing that 50s TV show that was a western. He would have been exactly the kind of person that would have been based on.
Kind of like a Western Clark Gable, almost.
Yeah, a lesser B version of that.
Yeah.
You know. Dr. Terry Mason, who is the
the lady doctor, the blonde lady,
who looks a little bit like Scarlett Johansson in the face.
Yes.
She was also in a bunch of movies in the 50s, kind of lesser B movies. She was in Hell in Frisco Bay and The Man Who Turned the Stone. And she was in The Harder They Fall with Humphrey Bogart. And then she also transitioned into television and did things like Perry Mason.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Stuff like that. but she started off in the war. She was doing stuff like entertaining the troops and doing all those kind of specialist kind of stuff.
What were those called? Like OSHA, USO shows and stuff?
Yeah, something like that. USOs and, and that kind of thing.
All right.
And, of course, she had a particular look, and she had some talent, so she was able to parlay that into a minor career, you know, which was nice. Mrs. Kilgore is played by Linda Watkins, who, if you look on her Internet Movie Database page, she has, like, almost 300 movies that she was in, but the vast majority of them are small, little, or uncredited roles, so...
But she was like extras and stuff,
right,
basically.
But she's been involved in a lot of stuff. She was in, quickly, she was in Gone with the Wind.
What?
Yeah, she was there. And well,
did you know what she played?
No, but she auditioned for the role of Scarlett O'Hara and didn't make it,
Thank God.
I would have loved to see her, like, you know, her Australian accent for Scarlett O'Hara.
She was a stage actress, and she kind of did a lot of extras and bit parts for a long time. She was in, of all things, The Parent Trap in 1961. That was another movie that she was actually in. But yeah, she was just in like a ton of bit parts and stuff throughout the 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. So, yeah, she was kind of a familiar person. Kimo, the guy who gets killed, he
the
was
surfer
played,
guy, right?
Right, he was played by Greg Palmer, who in no way, shape, or form looks anything like a Polynesian person.
Oh, yeah.
He was in a bunch of movies, you know, B-movies. He was in Battle at Apache Row or Apache Pass. He was in the classic stinker, The Zombies of Maratow.
The what?
The Zombies of Maratow. It
was Maratow?
One of my favorite, my brother's favorite stinkers from back in the day.
What, I mean, what was that about?
Zombies. It's a silly, awful
zombies in Maratow?
In the late 50s.
It's is it like a town or something that they're in?
Sort of. I'll bring it to Indie Film Cafe because it's definitely stink-worthy. Okay. So you'll check that out.
Okay.
He was also in a movie called The Female Animal and The Rebel Set. They were like 50s kind of rebel teenage movies. And
Of course. So, that was a thing.
It was definitely a thing. Corey... was the one with the pin things in her hair. Yeah.
Yep.
She was played by Susan Ridgway, who was in a whole bunch of stuff. She was also in a ton of different bit parts. She, you look on her Internet Movie Database page, and she was in things. She was also popped in Gone with the Wind.
I was going to say, I could see her being like a Scarlet.
Right,
you know,
right.
O'Hara.
She also popped into Citizen Kane.
What?
And The Big Sleep.
What?
Yeah. So she did little walk-on roles and little bit parts and little extra stuff.
Yeah, I'm blown away by that.
I mean, if you were an extra in that period, you got to be in all kinds of now very famous and just, you know, amazing movies.
Yeah.
You literally could make a career out of that.
Being an extra and, you know.
Yeah, so Susan Ridgway pretty much did that, and she also transitioned later into television and had pretty much a long, long career, you know, doing this kind of thing, although, you know, this movie is probably one of her more infamous roles. And then finally, one of the guys, one of the quote-unquote natives who survives at the end, he's kind of pops in and out. He plays Prince Meku, and I couldn't tell you which one. Now he has a band around his head. He was actually played by a guy named Chester Hayes, who in the 40s and 50s and 60s was a professional wrestler.
Nice.
And he's also the guy who wanders around in the Tabanga suit.
Nice.
What?
So he had a dual role.
Oh. Wait, he was the, which one was he before?
He played this guy called Prince Meku.
Maybe he was wearing the seashells.
Yeah,
maybe he was one of the background
guys. And I think he's the guy at the end who's like, oh, would you stay and be our witch doctor?
Okay. All right.
So he has like maybe 3 or 4 lines in the film.
And then he gets to walk around.
Then he gets to be the Tabanga and walk around and carry
it. He doesn't even I was growling, but then he doesn't even growl. He doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
It's a tree.
You have is audio in the background letting you know that the tree is.
Yeah, it's just every time you see the tree, it's got that weird music.
And there was this weird beeping that I heard, like, at some point in the movie. It sounded like an alarm or something. It was on the TV. I was very confuddled. Yeah. I was very confuddled.
That's a good word to describe this movie, confuddling. It's a bit of a
confuddled movie. Yeah. So, Mr. Moody, you noticed interesting stuff about the dialogue and the writing. So, since you do a lot of writing, I'm wondering if you could enlighten us about some of your notes.
The typical thing in Hollywood or even an indie film is to not use every dialogue to explain everything that's going on in the whole movie.
Usually it's like one guy, like exposition guy.
Yeah, there's usually an exposition guy or something, but literally everything was like, and it was all stuff that would point for the audience to understand, right? But it's stuff like you were pointing it out too, Paul, like some of the things that they were saying, they would be like, I'd be talking to Angel here, and I'd be like, Angel, you are a expert at, you know, special effects, you know, can you blah, 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 enlighten us, you know, right? But see, like,
she already knows that.
She already knows.
Everybody there knows that, but the audience doesn't. Right. See, that's why it's being done.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, I guess that okay in a podcast where we're all talking, we don't know, you know, audience, whatever. We can kind of just like use that as an interview kind of thing. But like when you're doing it in like a normal situation, it just sounds like it's right. Sounds written.
That's the whole point you made is that nobody talks like this. This right. is only in the movies and badly written movies at that where people talk like that, where they're. The point isn't to talk to the person. The point is to inform somebody else somewhere of what's going on and who these people are. And it's ridiculous.
You pointed out where they would say it loudly sometimes. Like, we should not, or we should be careful with the poison. And they're saying this out loud, and the person like, of course, there's somebody outside that's listening to the conversation. Yeah, so like, that's the point.
Funny. Yeah, that was that was the
poison berries.
Yes, here are the poison berries, the witch berries, the poison ones. Oh, that's right. You're trying to poison the Americans. Oh, and we're trying to do this on the down low. Oh my
jeez,
goodness.
Yeah, that's just crazy.
There was a butter knife.
That's true.
There was a butter knife stuck in a tree.
That's right. Corey goes after you. But it was supposed to be there was a chick fight.
There was and it looked like a regular knife at first, but later it became a butter knife.
A butter knife. It did. It had curved up end.
We did have the sort of the chick fight and
we had a chick fight. Sort of a chick
kinda,
fight.
Kind of, sort of. They pull each other's hair for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then they get separated, and then Corey backs up, and she happens to back up right next to the Tabanga.
Of course.
Of course. And the Tabanga
faints.
Yeah, and faints.
And faints, and then holds on to the, holds on while the guy is taking him, and then she gets dumped into the quicksand.
The quote-unquote quicksand, which is just a pool of water with some shit floating.
It looks like mud. And on top of that, you were pointing out, Paul, that she kept going further.
Yeah.
The first thing she does is push herself further and further into the middle instead of like grabbing onto the edge and pulling herself out.
You know why? Because obviously she has to look like she can't get out and whatever. So it's like, I mean, as if the quicksand had a fucking the thing in the water that drifts you away from the
like a riptide.
And it's funny because you can go on like YouTube and there are funny people who have already done this, but they've talked about how there really is no such thing as quicksand. You know, it's one of those Hollywood inventions to sort of make exotic places look dangerous, but it's really no such thing. So
John Mulaney said that one of my favorite quotes from him is that he was as a child he was always afraid that there was going to be quicksand everywhere,
right?
You know, because that's all that you see in the cartoons
it's a lazy lazy trope that you can throw into any situation there. Now the idea, and I know we don't have Lenore here and I can't be Lenore, but I'll try to sort of talk a little bit about it, but
the science
is that you've got an area, because if it's just a muddy pit of water it's just water. You can swim your way out of there. If it's just mud, you can. There's enough viscosity that you can climb out.
It's supposed to be quote-unquote quicksand.
The idea is that the ground, it's called liquefaction, and the ground, which is otherwise solid, has suddenly become liquefied to the point where you actually sink. But it doesn't really work like that, because you would have to have such a volume of quicksand or ground for this to work. And it would have to happen and then turn back, because it doesn't just stay in that mm-hmm. way, because it's not its natural state, that it would just take too long and it would take too much time. It just doesn't work like that.
Right.
You know, so it's just a lazy trope. Like a lot of the jungle movies from back in the 30s and 40s that they would just sort of, those the like Republic and some of the other early indie companies would make and just throw them out there, Jungle Jam and things like that, mm-hmm. with the fake natives and mm-hmm. fake-looking lions and stuff lions. They would always throw in a couple of quicksand.
So that's why they had to have it, because it was a jungle movie without and being a jungle movie.
They know that, you know, 99% of the audience in the 30s, 40s, and even 50s, they don't know what the hell quicksand is.
Right.
They've never been in a jungle. They've never seen anything like that. So it's an easy thing you toss out there, and people are like, oh, my God, quicksand. Well, when we're kids and we're watching this, we think, sure, there's quicksand everywhere.
Everywhere. It's like the floor is lava. Yeah.
No. Right. Doesn't really work.
Doesn't like work that way, no.
But it's just funny. It's just one of the hallmarks of the period. So your wandering monsters, your you know...
Women fainting,
your, you know... All that stuff, the non-consent kissing, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff.
That was cringy.
The weird, like, romantic sort of dialogue that they're trying to do.
Well, okay, so before we get into that real quick, I do want to talk about the cringy kissing, because, so, in the scene...
Cringe.
Like, in the scene, there's, like, a scene where he tries to go in to kiss her, and he's going so slow... And he's taking his time, and like any point in time, she could just walk away, right? And she, and then literally, when it gets to her mouth, she goes, "No, never mind."
Turns
and then turns her head, walks away, and he follows her, like stalks her down, and then he comes in and like basically talks, you know, basically, and she says she basically doesn't want to mix work with pleasure and kind of thing, and she was just not interested. She wants to stay, whatever.
No,
whatever, stupid.
No, man.
Yeah, basically telling him, dude, I'm not interested in you, you know, whatever. Then he goes in
you
for
need
a
to be
kiss.
More of a, yeah, he's like, you need to be more of a woman and less of a doctor.
Yeah, oh uh-huh, my God.
Uh-huh.
That
you need
kind
to be a woman
first. Jesus Christ.
Of a doctor.
She should have narded his ass right then and there.
But anyway, so he goes in for a kiss, and then she doesn't reciprocate. And he gets all upset about that. Like, why don't you want to kiss me and all this stuff? And I'm just like thinking, God damn, dude. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you, man?
Right,
like,
right.
If she's not interested, back the fuck off, you know? Right. But what happens at the end of the movie? They kiss.
Of course.
Because he didn't even save her. It was the other guy that shot.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was like the other guy saves her. She should be kissing the other guy.
Right.
And he's taking, like, all the credit. Like, hey,
Well, to me, the funniest thing that at least I said in the movie at that point was because you got to hear her awkward squawk when the tree picks her up. And I was pretending to be Dr. Arnold. And I was like... Yeah, I thought you were pretty hot until I heard you squawk like that. No, I have no interest.
Well, that didn't happen. I guess he got more interest because of the squawk. I don't know. Maybe he was like, I can make her squawk like that, you know?
And it's funny because, so you know, creepy. The toboggan has picked her up and she's just kind of lightly slapping
the toboggan?
Him. Yeah, the tobago.
Toboggan. Whatever it is.
Tabonga.
Whatever the fucking tobongo, toboggan.
So ridiculous.
Baranga, whatever it is.
You know? But, you know, she could have, like, avoided it. Everybody in this film could have easily avoided it.
You kept saying
no.
that, like, you could run around it.
Yeah.
Yes. But see, when you were saying that at the time... They were trying to lure it into this pit. Oh, we forgot to mention that. So it was trying to lure it into a pit so that they could... put, you know, to set it on fire or whatever.
Traffic, dump Tobanga Falls for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know,
it's a dumb tree. You should fall for it.
I know. It's a dumbass tree. You know, like, it shouldn't be that hard to figure out. You know, you should be like, hey, look over there. Right. And Tobanga will be like, what?
Right. That's what I'm saying. This is not a very difficult foe. It's dumb. It's slow. It's stupid. You know, it doesn't have mouth that moves. It doesn't have hands that move. I mean, good Lord.
It gets like, eyes eventually.
This
but
is
like
the lowest hanging fruit when it comes to
monsters. Have arms or hands that can move, but somehow it crawls out of this trap that's been set on fire.
And it's like a 10-foot trap, too. And, of course, the fire doesn't do anything. So it's like, okay, is this supernatural wood? I mean, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Like, it's very, very strange.
And he came out, like, you know, with smoke and stuff all over him, looking all very disgruntled.
I love when he's about to dump the squawking doctor into the quicksand, and they're panicking, so they get their rifles, because that's what American white men do, is shoot things. So they start shooting it, and the guy's like, it's no good, it's like BBs bouncing off a wall.
Off, yeah.
And they say that like several times. It's just so funny. So that's said to impress all of us, to say, hey, this is a tough tree.
Yeah,
we should be impressed.
Really tough tree.
Really tough tree.
That's why they had to shoot it in the knife, which was conveniently left there.
Yeah, still in the tree.
Right,
still
right.
In the tree.
It was just
Jesus
so
Christ.
Silly. So you guys seem to have a lot of fun with it. You both seem to laugh
a lot.
We were laughing, having
ridiculous.
Fun. And laughing out loud, like loud laughing, because it was so ridiculous and over the top.
Yeah.
This is probably, I'm not going to lie, this is probably one of the more fun older movies you show me.
Sure.
Like, I keep going back to The Giant Claw, but like it has, that movie was like the most fun I've seen in a long time. I've loved that movie. In fact, we do a show called like Davila's Midnight Movie Mortuary, and we do we're gonna do other ones like that, you know, where they're public domain horror movies. And I would really love to put like, I guess Warner Brothers owns this one, so we can't use this one. I think Giant Claw is public domain,
so
we could use that. But you know what I mean? Like, those are so much fun, and I actually love watching them. And I mean, MST3K-ing them basically, you know, is more fun than, you know, it's fun to watch with people.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
If I were watching this by myself, I'd be bored.
These are party movies.
Yeah.
They really, really are. And the thing that really kind of makes them fun is that, of course, they are low budget, even by independent standards. So what they have to do is they have to overly dramatize everything. Mm-hmm. Everything has to be super dramatic. Mm-hmm. And that's why there's this ridiculous over-the-top music, ridiculous over-the-top scenes, ridiculous over-the-top dialogue, because they have to sell it.
Yeah.
And it ain't going to be sold by the monster. I mean, the monster is not scary at all.
You're not going to be scared by that monster?
I have to. It's funny. I have to keep reminding people when they watch this. This is supposed to be a horror movie.
Yeah.
You guys are laughing.
And we were laughing the whole time.
That's not what the movie's meant to do, but that's what it does do.
Yeah,
and
that's why
we love this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know? But it's the only way they can combat that is to overly dramaticize. And that's why I love those classic trailers.
Trailer.
Hell, it came. Yeah. You know,
trying to make it sound scary, but even the trailer made it look really silly.
Ridiculous.
Like, so you said the trailer, and I wonder if that's the trailer that they had back in
trailer.
The 1950s.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm wondering if like people saw this and were like, that's like,
yeah, like,
was that scary?
like
what the hell from where it came? Like,
it's supposed to, it's you know, like all trailers, a good trailer, it's supposed to make you curious and interested enough that you're going to go plunk your money down, and by then it's too late. So you're already in the theater, you know, but, you know,
I don't think anybody in the 50s were going, wow, this looks like it'll be terrifying.
This movie was very famously panned when it came out. Even in 1957, people were not buying this. No.
They weren't buying this.
No.
Well, was the Rug Monster movie, Creeping Terror, was that panned too?
Yeah, but it was a different period, because even though it was...
That was 60s, right?
Early 60s. And that, by the time it actually came out, they had more of a drive-in theater crowd. And
so those were more fun. Like they
At that point, the audience was different. In the 50s, you still had people who were actually going into regular theaters and would pay attention. Whereas in the, by the time you get to the drive-ins, it's teenagers in an outdoor theater with probably drugs and booze and making out. And that's really why the drive-in existed. It was a time to take your date there so you could make out.
I'm so sad.
Movies had nothing to do with it.
I'm so sad I never had a drive-in, you know.
Oh, drive-ins are great. I got to, towards the end, like the 70s when I was a little kid, I got to go to some drive-ins.
I know, I got to go one when I was in L.A. with Lila and Bobby. We got to go out and do that. And that was my first drive-in experience. But it was so weird to see, like, because I would love to see these movies in the drive-in. But we saw, like, real movies, you know, or whatever. And it was fun and it was enjoyable. But, like, I would love for one of our films to go to the drive-ins.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that would be just
a lot. And that's why Joe Bob has his whole show built around drive-in theater, because there's a certain kind of film, a certain class of film that is made in such a way that the movie itself is incidental to the experience of going to the drive-in and doing whatever it is you're going to do at the drive-in. Yeah. It's the place to do it. And, oh, by the way, here's a weird, stupid, ridiculous monster movie.
Yeah, because you can barely hear the stuff. You know. So it doesn't matter what they say or do, because you're not really going to be paying that much attention.
So basically stuff that never would have even made it, even lower and worse than From Hell It Came, made it into the drive-in because it didn't matter. Mm. They just wanted content. They just wanted something to throw up there. And as a matter of fact, a lot of movies from that period were simply the same movies re-released over and over and over with a different title, or they might have tacked on an extra 2 minutes or 3 minutes here or there and just said it was another movie, and then they could recycle it again and get more money. And Roger Corman, Roger Corman was able to pay for his other movies, his other better movies, by being able to recycle crappier films
and put them in the drive-in.
He was always smart,
filmmaker.
The same thing happens later in the early 80s when the VHS craze comes in. It's just instead of doing it out in the theaters, you did it on
at
VHS.
You did it at home.
Every VHS place on the corner had a whole selection of stuff that normally you would never see in the theaters or never see anywhere.
Yeah, which makes me sad because, you know, like, you got this. This is a Warner Archives Blu-ray, you know, which is really nice that, like, Warner Brothers actually put this out. And you can tell they actually took care of, like, that. It looked clean and crisp.
I never saw this on DVD. I don't know that it ever had a DVD release.
It might not have. And that's weird. And it probably had a VHS release.
It did. I had the VHS.
So here's the thing. Like, back in the old days, VHSs, there was a million VHSs.
Yep.
Millions and millions. Yep. Then DVD came around, and there was a lot of DVDs, too. So I'm very surprised that there was DVDs.
But less. Every time you get a new technology, less movies get put out because
that's
more
funny.
Expensive.
That's funny because then you, so it went from VHS, I guarantee you did not get a Laserdisc, but the VHS to DVD, right? Or no, well, it skipped DVD, went straight to Blu-ray for this movie, right? And so some movies do that. Like, if they're like, oh, we never put a DVD out, let's just put a Blu-ray out. Nobody would care.
Well, the thing is, I mean, there are companies, there are independent companies, Vinegar Syndrome, and
Kino Lorber,
and all that. There are people like you and I who love certain films, even though they're not the big Hollywood things. Mm-hmm. And if they get the opportunity, they will re-release them on Blu-ray. My big hope is that they're going to start releasing them on 4K, because how awesome would that be?
Better.
Yeah.
And it's great because that's one reason why I want to do shows like this and why I want to do movies like this, is so they're not forgotten.
Yeah.
Okay? Maybe this movie didn't perform the way that the Milner brothers originally intended, okay?
Right.
But you guys, and I, certainly when I first saw it, I was way entertained. This is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
You had a great time watching it. People should have a great time. They should see this movie.
Yeah.
It's a load of fun. Not for its original intent, perhaps, but you're still going to have a great time. This is
very entertaining.
This is one of the staple movies. Every time I would have friends over for Halloween, this and maybe a half dozen other films, we get a bunch of pizzas and some adult beverages and snacks, and we would sit there and put all on, you know, we have our serious films first, our Night of the Living Deads and, you know, that kind of thing, Horror Hotel. And then we transition into some of the stinker ones, Plan 9.
That sounds fun.
Robot
Monster. Man, we need to do that again.
Stuff like this.
Like Indie Film Cafe style.
Right,
like, that would
right,
be
right,
fun.
Right. Yeah. Oh, well, the State Theater back in Delaware, Newark, Delaware, where I was went to college, they would do a 48-hour film fest all the time. And it was usually your better movies start off first, and then you get stinkier and stinkier and stinkier. Mm-hmm. And the idea is you paid one fee, and you got to stay 48 hours the whole weekend, and you and they kept moving them. Every time they did a movie, it'd stop for 5 minutes, change the role, put in a new one, and then there's another movie. And you get to see 48 hours worth of films.
If you wanted to, yeah.
If you wanted to. Like, sit around. And, of course, back in the day, I sat there through several of those and watched all of them.
Oh, Jesus
Christ.
It
was a great time to watch that stuff.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine. Wow.
Forbidden Zone. That's how I first saw Forbidden Zone.
That's awesome.
You know? A bunch of movies. And then, you know, I'll admit, the first time I saw Seven Samurai, one of my favorite movies of all time. I saw it there released, you know, by itself, but then I also saw it as part of one of those 48-hour festivals, too. So, yeah, it's great. So that's why I wanted to talk about this. I got a whole bunch of old movies like that. And, see, I know Lenore would have loved this because of all the ridiculous, terrible science.
Was there science? There wasn't science.
You know, I mean, when the lady doctor was talking about just her serum that she made up, it was just garbage.
Yeah, that part was garbage. And then they're like, oh, the tree is alive. I can feel the pulse. Like, what the fuck?
Like, oh, my God.
My goodness.
Yeah, one of my favorite things, and you pointed it right out, is when the lady doctor is using her stethoscope to listen to the tree. I'm like, really? What are you doing? What do
like
you tell
it
me?
Knows, like it knows it has a pull. I mean, Jesus Christ.
And it was funny because she's like, yeah, no, I have this eerie feeling. This thing knows exactly what we're talking
and
about.
And you yelled at that point. You were like, no, you don't! Like,
it did because the script demands it.
Right.
You know, lazy script writing.
I know. Like, seriously, like that woman's looking over going, because it's got a face, it knows exactly what we're thinking. Because, like, okay, I'm sorry. First of all, it's a stump. It's a freaking tree or whatever. And so at first it's got a little bit of a face or whatever. Then the stump grows into a bigger tree. Then even a bigger tree or whatever into, like, an actual tree that kills, you know, or whatever.
We never saw where that snake went.
Yeah, I know.
That was just a throwaway.
There was a snake and a monkey.
Yeah,
it would have been, the monkey ran away, so that I can understand that. But like the snake was just sitting there, and that was just, I guess it was just to show us a passage of time or something.
Well,
you know,
it's the reminder they're in the quote unquote tropics, even though, you know, it was probably filmed somewhere in L.A., probably Bryce Canyon or something like that.
Yeah,
that's where all this. Cheap stinkers were shot there.
Back to the science of it, there was that one lady that came up and was like, oh, the tree is bleeding green, like dead human bodies or or whatever. Like,
bleed green?
Like, chlorophyll? Yeah, like, what? I mean, what?
Do we I'm sorry, but my blood is red. If I had green blood, you might think I was
an
alien.
Blood is blue. It's not red.
It's until
the oxygen
hits it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Hits,
so blue blood running through our veins.
That's why it looks blue in your veins.
Yeah. Okay. There you go.
Isn't that crazy? Science.
Science. You learn a new thing every day, but not from this movie.
But yeah, Lenore would love this. But I also know Just Jen would love this too.
I think she would. She loves those stinky '50s B movies, and that's. I mean, this is just MST3K. Like, I'm surprised they haven't done this movie yet.
This is a great little time capsule of 1957.
I'm honestly thinking that a lot of that might have to do with the rights of, you know, Warner Brothers owning the rights, and they probably would cost an arm and a leg just to let them do this.
Costumes.
Yes.
You noticed some interesting bits about the ladies, but costumes in general.
So, like, the ladies, so the American ladies, first of all, one is a doctor and one is just some British drunken lady, but they're wearing, like, the same thing.
Outfit,
it's like it's like the main actress is, like, the younger version of this, of that drunk lady. And
the
it's like her mom or something, you know, or whatever.
And then
it's
the natives.
You were saying they were, like, a mirror image. It's like, the one's the regular version and the other
it was
is, like,
the
this
aged,
is what I'm going to look like
version.
25 years and six crates of whiskey
right,
later.
Oh, my God. I wonder if she did. That would be really funny to like, see if that's what she looked like when she got
cheap whiskey.
And then, like, the natives had all sorts of, like, elaborate patterns and stuff all over their, like, loincloth, quote unquote loincloths or togas or whatever they were wearing.
But then they'd have like toga, cheap stuff. Like toga. This one guy had like one feather stake along there.
Yeah.
Had, like, one shell.
Yeah. The literally you could see like the headband was like a piece of leather with like twine and attached
seashells.
There we go.
I get it, yeah.
Seashells down by the seashore.
Okay. Well, I think we're about at that time.
I did. I did enjoy this better than Creeping Terror.
Oh, really?
Good.
Creeping Terror is even worse. That's what I'm saying. It's a terrible movie.
Yeah.
This is a little more fun.
Yeah.
This is a little bit more fun, but not just as badly made, though. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, just a little more fun.
A little more common. At least the guy's Tabanga costume didn't get stolen the day before, and they had to come up with something at the last second. Yeah. And at least he didn't lose his soundtrack and have to get dubbed in.
You know, that guy, you said the director of Creeping Terror was a dick, right?
Oh, yeah.
He made a whole the creep behind the camera.
You've got to see that. We should see that while you're here.
Yeah.
A chance. It's really good. It's very enlightening.
Okay.
So, very cool. But you're right. We're at the time where we have to talk about rating our film. And for those of you who've not been on our show before, this is where we consult our stinkometer and we rate our films on a score of 1 to 10, by which the larger the number, the more stink it is. So if it's a 1, you don't think it's a very stinky movie at all. It's a pretty good film. If it's a 5, it's kind of in between. A little bit
it's
of
mediocre stink.
Mediocre stink. And then if it's a 10, it's a big old steaming pile of horse poo.
Or cow stink. Poo.
Or cow poo. And you can be subtle and give it a half step, a 0.5 if you want. And then we total up that stink score, and then we figure out which movie's the stinkiest movie of the season. All right. Yeah. And we've had a number of stinkers. And you, dude, have you known that you've given out 4 tens this season?
Oh.
This is the most tens anyone's given out ever.
I know.
Gosh. You gave out 4 tens, a 9.5, and a 9. And we're like barely halfway through the season. You've been harsh, man.
Well, I'm going to be a lot nicer on this one, I think.
You've been you've been seeing a lot of crappy films.
I know.
And yet, at the same time, we don't have a 30 yet. I'm just blown away by that.
Wow.
So, who wants to start? Our guest usually starts.
You know what? Oh, gosh. I would say a 9 because it is very stinky, but for the fact that I was laughing like the entire way through it, it was entertaining. It was entertaining stink.
There you go. Yeah, I would have to say, I would probably have to say an 8.5. It's
8.5.
Pretty darn stinky.
Yeah.
It does have some production values that are actually, you know, okay.
Yeah.
You know,
they had a helicopter, even though like the sign or whatever.
Right, right.
I mean, that's cool.
The acting for the main people was pretty darn good, pretty typical of the time. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys had long careers, and so they probably knew what they were doing was garbage, mm-hmm. but they went with it. I was believing them. You know, if you can get past all the ridiculousness of the time period, they were pretty good.
Yeah.
The direction wasn't too bad. I mean, it's nothing to write home about, but I saw there were no mistakes.
Mm.
There was enough good stuff that it overwhelmed the massive amount of stink, but it was still pretty terrible.
Yeah.
And an 8.5 is a fair score for me, I think.
So I remember giving Creeping Terror an 8.5, which you gave a 10.
Oh, yeah.
You know, right? So you definitely think this is better, you know, than that. And I would give it an 8. And, you know, the reason is because, like, I was kind of comparing it to Creeping Terror with the thing just walking. And taking forever and whatnot and people jumping into the mouth of the thing instead of whatever. This, at least they fainted. So, like, it made sense, I guess, whatever. They're so scared they fainted. Yet they're... Like, as Angel pointed out, they were holding on to the thing. So it's like you can't be fainting and holding on to, like, the thing at the same time. That makes no sense whatsoever, but whatever. Anyway, I would give it an 8 because I think that the movie was fun enough. Like, it was enjoyable, but it was still bad.
For
like,
the wrong reasons.
Right, it was enjoyable for the wrong reasons. I mean, obviously, they don't want us to be laughing at it when or whatever. But we were laughing out loud so much. We're having fun. This movie, honestly, once again, I think if you have a group of friends together and you guys are bored, maybe drunk, I don't know. I don't drink anymore, yeah. But if you guys are drunk, you can just watch this and just enjoy yourself and like laugh at how silly and stupid and fun it is, you know.
It's definitely a group party movie. It just makes it a lot more fun. And that's why I love having folks in the studio so that we could all be together and enjoy it all at the same time. It's just neat.
Honorable mention to the pointy bra, by the way, that the doctor wore.
Honorable mention. Pointing the direction she was going to walk at all times.
Exactly. Yeah. Torpedo bra or something.
Yeah, something quite like that. I was impressed.
You're impressed.
Oh yeah.
I mean, she walked with attitude with those.
It was mighty cold in those South Sea Islands.
Yeah. Oh Lord. Yeah. This movie, but it was fun. It was enjoyable. I liked it.
It was funny, man, because remember when they revived the tree and she was like, oh, excited and happy.
Yeah, oh, my God.
I was like, wow, she really wants to get in that tree.
She really wanted some of that wood.
Maybe there was an attraction there whatsoever. I'll tell you, man, I got to rewrite this movie and give it a happy ending, quote unquote.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, there'll be some green liquid, but it won't be blood.
Fuck.
And we're gonna turn this into a that's right. We're gonna turn this into a sexploitation sleaze cast kind of a movie.
No.
Yes.
Rebecca has to star in it though.
There you go. She will. She would love it.
She
would love this.
She would die for that.
Yeah.
An angel would jump in and do that, you know. Well, thank you, Angel, for coming on and being a part of Indie Film Cafe itself. I know you're on the Patreon, mm-hmm. so absolutely. This was fun to actually have you here in the studio.
Yeah.
We'll have you back, as we were talking earlier, like, you know, you live close enough where you could come by and stop in. And
if you're interested, I don't know if this is your cup of tea or not.
I love it. It's definitely my cup of tea.
Yay.
Yeah. I love it.
Definitely. Like, you had a lot of fun. Like, you were laughing.
I mean, it's weird. I don't know how other people out in, like, especially the Facebook universe kind of look at us talking about these movies and doing this show. It's like, you know, there are those two weird guys that watch those crappy movies.
One guy likes cows.
The other guy talks and talks and talks. So, but now you're actually here hanging out with us and watching the movies with us.
Yeah.
You know, we're harmless.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love this. I can't wait to come back.
You can see where we're coming from.
Then. Yes.
We didn't lean in to give you a kiss, like, you know, and keep leaning and keep leaning, keep leaning until you decide, nope, don't want it. It's like, that show is so fucking ridiculous. I'm sorry.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man. This movie, I'll have nightmares about this movie. Mm. You know,
love to see what Lila would have to say. She'd probably love this movie too, but she'd have definitely things to say
about the
interaction between the male and female characters,
the consent and shit, and that would probably bother her. Like, honestly, it bothered me. Like, and I'm not like somebody who like fights for that kind of like whatever. Like,
well,
I'm not.
And just, I mean, it was nice that they let the doctor be a lady. I mean, you generally didn't get that back in the 50s. But
except for Giant Claw.
Well, she was more of a mathematician, so not quite a doctor. But same thing. Both times, I mean, in Giant Claw, it's worse. But the guy seems to be trying to undermine her, you know, her authority or her knowledge. You know, like, especially when that line about stop being a doctor and being more of a woman.
Yeah,
which is ridiculous.
Yeah, that was right.
I could be both. Hello.
Yeah.
Well, no, but just that. But he's saying that so that he can get in her pants.
Of course.
You know,
of course.
Whatever. Like, stop. Be a woman for once, so that I can
kiss
so
you
that I can kiss
have
you.
My way
smooch,
with
smooch,
you.
Smooch.
Yeah.
You know,
so we can make little saplings.
Yeah. It's okay. All he has to do is let somebody else shoot the gun.
Let me plant
knife.
A seed in you and see where this grows.
Oh God, stop.
Paul is the funniest person I know.
Finally, I will get my branches around you.
Oh Lord.
See, my bark is not as bad as my bite.
Oh Lord. Okay, you're done. You're cut off.
On that note.
Angel, thank you so much. We
thank
are
you.
Absolutely.
So we got her to come out because we're doing a movie with her. So called The Love Spell, and we actually start shooting tonight. So this will be out when this comes out on the Monday. It'll be we already would have done it. So hopefully, I'm pretty sure it'll go very, very well.
It definitely will. Yeah, I'm very excited.
There you go.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And Paul, thank you.
Absolutely. It was always fun. I always love turning on my friends to stinky old classics like this.
And she said she saw our studio and saw all the DVDs we're collecting. Now it makes her want to collect DVDs.
There you go.
That's what we're here for, really. That's why we're...
physical media. That's where
physical
it's at.
Media collectors, man. You know, reunite. Yes. You know?
Movie nerds unite.
Yes, exactly. Well, thank you guys.
Thank you.
This has been fun, and we're really excited.
And we will see you next time. Next time. Oh, we almost forgot. We do have the monkey here.
There was like one continuity error.
The drink. It was the drink. It was there was a lady. Yeah, the British lady who poured herself a drink and was, you know, like drank it and then
don't be stingy, love. Don't be stingy, ducky.
Don't be stingy. Then it was gone. It was like, wait, did you drink it back?
Slurp that down like you wouldn't believe.
Squeak that monkey then.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. Hope you guys enjoyed our little podcast.
Yeah,
and join us in 2 more weeks for another one.
Yay.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.